So we started Lunar Pickleball a couple years ago, not because I wanted to make money or anything, because, you know, players over there needed some good paddles. We have no traditional sales channels open as of now.
Like, love
you
it.
Only get the paddles through athletes, right? People always DM us on Instagram, where can I buy paddles? It's not, we don't even have a website. We don't even have a graphic designer. Like, it's my wife, myself, all homegrown and, you know, back of the trunk, right? So now we have over 100 players on our roster.
That's awesome. So, all right, Matt Nola, and I saw you in Vietnam, and now you're, well, you also live in Bangkok, but now you're in Wichita. So
Wichita,
one, welcome to Behind the Paddle. This is, you know, just a podcast where we dig into people's stories that are doing cool things in pickleball and trying to figure out what brought them to this world of pickleball and what they're doing and kind of what your aspirations are within the sport. So one, thank you for, you know, taking the time to be on. I really appreciate it. And two, let's Wichita, Vietnam, Bangkok. What led you to all those different places?
First of all, thanks for having me, Rob. Appreciate you. You are a legend, and just to be here is an honor. And appreciate you even having me on, having a nobody on here. So,
oh, you are not a nobody, but no, happy to have you on.
What brought me to you know, my journey started about 3 years ago during the pandemic, right? Like everyone else's journey, started playing pickleball, made fun of the sport, and then I fell in love with it right away.
So, of course.
Started playing, and then, you know, I saw how social and competitive it could be. Started to grind, trained with a lot of cool people like Jay DeVillier, Pat Smith, those guys right down the street from me. So, got a chance to, you know, see the pro game a little bit and got addicted, man.
Pretty lucky in terms of being in Wichita and having access to those guys, you know?
Oh, I'm so lucky, so fortunate. And, you know, Jay Jocelyn has been, you know, very gracious to take me under his wing. We, you know, drill together, train together when he's available. And so that kind of like, oh, just got me so excited to pick him up.
That love it.
So,
and yeah, then, so now you're okay. So fast forward 3 years or 4 years now, maybe, you are living in Bangkok. Is that right? Or spending some time in Bangkok?
Yeah. So I split time in Bangkok. I got acclimated to the game and did a little, you know, stint on the, qualies in the pro tour for a little bit, PPA. And then, I started traveling to Asia about 3 years ago, saying, hey, you know, looking for tournaments and everything else. And I saw there was a lot of gaps in pickleball that I could fill, especially in resources and in opportunities for players on the other side, right? And so I started reaching out to companies like Electrum, Yola, before Yola was really Yola, right?
Yeah.
And even Prince. Saying, hey, can I carry your banner? Can I bring some paddles over there, help out some players? And, you know, they thought it was a cool idea, and but the game wasn't just ready. Those companies weren't ready to go over in Asia, right?
Got it.
What I saw, I was like, wow, there's a golden opportunity. So I started a paddle brand, not because I wanted to make money or anything, because, you know, players over there needed some good paddles. And that's how it all started. Now I'm living in Bangkok, pushing my brand, helping athletes with resources. And now I'm in the heart of Bangkok
situation. Love it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, tell us about the paddle company. So it's Lunar Pickleball. And are you primarily focused with players in Southeast Asia or Asia in general?
Yeah. So we started Lunar Pickleball a couple years ago. We actually started with players in Philippines, Thailand. Well, Thailand was the first country. Thailand, Philippines, Vietnam. But we have actually two players that were formerly with Lunar that we contracted. We were contracted PPA players, Lingwei Kong, Maddie Schulte. Mm-hmm. And shout out to Pat Smith, who's helped, Pat and Jay, who's helped me, like, you know, not really design, but gave me some good feedback on the paddle and was able to help me, you know, in that space. So, yeah, now we have over 100 players on our roster.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
Got like and are you selling mostly to the Asian market? Or are you selling in the U.S. as well?
Every market, but the crazy thing is my focus was not really to sell paddles, right? It's really to provide athletes with resources. So we have no traditional sales channels open as of now. Like,
love
you
it.
Can only get the paddles through athletes, right? Athletes get support from the paddles, and people always DM us on Instagram, where can I buy paddles? It's not, we don't even have a website. So
I love it. I love it. I love the anti-marketing. Yeah, it's exactly. It's truly just give paddles to players, let them, are you letting them, like, are you giving like a player that you have on roster, like if they want 20 paddles to go sell and to like, is that the market? Like where they're selling direct to different people in their local town?
Correct. Yeah. Like, you know, like Leander Lazaro, and he's one of our star players, and he's a distributor also. So we give him, he orders 50, 60, 100. 200 paddles at a time, just sells it in the Philippines, right?
Got it. And is that good for you guys? Because you are like, is Leander, for example, is he buying them wholesale from you and then selling them at retail, or what's, or are you, you know, giving the paddles on like, call it consignment, and then, you know, he's getting paid once he sells them?
Yeah, whatever option is easiest for our players. So both. Sure. He's done both. So, and we don't even have a graphic designer. Like it's my wife, myself, not really.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. Just all homegrown and, you know, back of the trunk. Right. So,
yeah,
but you know, we are, I wouldn't say getting serious. We are, we're going to open up our sales channels and really get serious into, selling, and because there's a huge demand for our paddles. So,
yeah. Well, I love the start of it. You know, you create demand like that, right? It's like, oh, you can't get this paddle anywhere. Like, oh, I've got to go find Leander. Good God. Like, you know, it creates a good buzz. I love that approach. So big props on that. And then, yeah, it's going to make opening the sales channel much easier when there's already some demand there.
Huge demand. Like, shout out to like Happy Hub, who we just recently partnered with in Vietnam. They're the biggest, they're the most popular pickleball club in Vietnam, in Ho Chi Minh City, and all of Vietnam, actually. And they, they're going to be partnering us with paddles. They're connected to the KOL scene, which is the celebrity scene. I'm excited for that partnership. They're going to help us with the marketing arm too, so get
love
things
it.
Rolling.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you mentioned you know, the focus is on getting resources to players. Outside of the paddles, is there anything else that that you're providing the players with, or, you know, in terms of resources?
Yeah, you know Lunar, my goal was to build a culture to support players with their paddles and equipment and gear, right? And I'm finding it more of a challenge each day because we have new paddle companies coming in with more resources that will pay players like salary, right?
Sure.
I'm looking at maybe $1,000 to $2,000 a month for, you know, players over there, which is great for us.
Yeah.
I'm dealing with, hey, some of our players leaving and coming and going, you know, we've had Armand leave us, but he's, you know, he's done great. And our mantra is like next man up, right? I don't want to keep our players confined. I mean, if they find a different company that's successful and that helps them and supports them more, then I want them to be there, right?
Love it. Yeah. And that's how it should be. It's right. It's like, you don't need to get pissed on a player leaving when they're, you know, you basically gave them a platform to find that. So I think it's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Armand is flourishing. That we have, you know, Leander could possibly leave us, and then even some of our star players. And, you know, it hurts at first because I treat them as family, but, you know, it's too early in the game to lock anyone down to
yeah
to hold no, anyone I back, agree. Right? So
yeah. So why Bangkok? What took you to Bangkok of all places? Oh,
Bangkok, paradise. I've been traveling. Man, if you don't know about Thailand, then you need to know. And I think Rob, you have a glimpse of what life is like over there. I would say Bangkok is like New York City on steroids, but the nicer type of New York City, right? I've never experienced a culture like Thailand, like Thai people, anywhere in the world. And I'm pretty well traveled. I'm not like ethnically Thai. I'm Lao, Viet, and Chinese, but Thailand has just been very dear to my heart because of the culture, the people, very inviting, accepting, warm, right? What was your experience like in Thailand?
Absolutely the same. Like this was probably 2015 probably. I spent, I had just started an advertising business fully remote, fully online with a guy from Minneapolis that I became good friends with. So we became business partners. And at the time it was just like, we could do this anywhere. You know, I don't know how old I was at the time, 29 or something. I was like, let's go to Thailand. So we moved to Chiang Mai and we're there for about 6 months. And Thailand's great because you can have like a very nice lifestyle and obviously your money goes much further. So like if you're in business, especially just starting out, like your runway, you know, going to Thailand for your runway versus, you know, being in the States, like it like 5x's, 10x's, you know, how long you can operate and get things going. So in terms of starting business, it's like no brainer in terms of being a good place where you can keep costs low and like really invest in the business and spend time there. And the culture in terms of even like expats there is huge. Like there's so many people there that like it's great community in terms of people like-minded doing the same things. But you're absolutely right. Like one of the, like some of my fondest memories, you know, in Chiang Mai, for example, is going to this little cafe in the morning called Smoothie Blues and like becoming friends with the servers and the staff there and the owner. And it's like just such kind, happy, just genuinely nice people, like not even trying to get anything out of you. Right. Like half the time they're like, oh, just thank you for coming. Enjoy the breakfast on us. And like, what? Like, but just nice, nice people. And I couldn't agree more. Like that's some of my best memories in terms of just culturally speaking, being in a different country, like not knowing the language, just so kind.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Like, you know, Randy Coleman and I, we've left like, he's in Chiang Mai and we've left our phones out in public or on our motorbike, come back to 5 hours later, still there. Like, I don't know any other country that we could do that.
No, no, there'll be somebody that'll grab that thing.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. No, there's so many stories like that. It's a special place for sure. And you also mentioned to me that you're building a facility in Bangkok. Tell me more about that.
Yeah. We're 20 million people in. There's probably a handful of good pickleball courts, and I know the situation is changing, but you know, in Wichita alone, we have probably over 150 courts with 600,000 people. And compare that to Bangkok, it's like Bangkok is a little slower in building and infrastructure for pickleball. And I think this is where there's a good opportunity for people like me and anyone else that, you know, want to really get into pickleball is, hey, if we can build infrastructure, build pickleball courts, premium pickleball courts, then we can get a lot more people playing, right? Because there should be a lot more people playing in that side of the world. Not enough. Maybe 1,000 players.
Yeah.
In all of Thailand.
100%.
So.
And I think that's the, it's a little bit of the issue. And I think we've talked about it before, is like you have participation. But you have participation at like gyms, hardwood floors, badminton courts, in the case of Asia, a lot of the times, which is like, it's great to get people playing, but there's nothing like playing on a real permanent court in a nice facility for the first time. Mm-hmm. It feels different. It's like, this is a real sport. It's got its own court. It's like, I think once people experience that, let's call it like somebody that's been interested in like, oh, at the local community center in Asia or Europe, like, oh, I'd try pickleball. Let's go out, like doing that versus playing on a real court. I think is a big difference. And I think it's scary. It's risky at the beginning because, you know, there might not be an incredible demand for it necessarily right away. Mm-hmm. But when there's a real facility and real courts, I think the demand will get filled very quickly. And that's, I'm saying that based on what's happened in the States, right? Mm-hmm. It's like once real courts came, you saw participation continue to surge. So I think that's going to be like infrastructure is going to be super key in the rest of the world outside of the States. And I think whoever can, you know, really get ahead of that and start building that infrastructure is going to be in a really, really good spot.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Like, you know, I was last month, I played padel for the first time. I walked into a padel center, Pad Thai padel in Bangkok, right in the middle of the city, right? It was like $50 an hour. That's expensive.
Bangkok is a lot.
That's sad for that side of the world, but I was happy to pay it because I walk in and say, wow, premium facility. The staff was nice, sweet. The bathrooms were nice. It's like, wow, okay.
Yeah.
I'm not complaining at all, right? And if I can get that in a pickleball facility, which I have not seen yet in Thailand, I'd be glad to pay for it, right?
Yeah.
So
were the padel courts pretty full?
It's packed.
Yeah.
was like, I had to book a week in advance. And there's probably 1 hour, 2 hours a day that's open, right? So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the same is going to happen with Pickle. And it's the same situation. I think I mentioned to you that I've got good buddies that run Pickle Bali down in Bali in Indonesia. And there's a bunch of padel facilities that are constantly full, packed. The demand is actually the demand's crazy and there's not enough courts. And, and with pickleball, there's nothing really. There's like some kind of beat up old tennis courts where they can play on, where the surface is different and bad and like slick. But it is that taking the leap of will people, especially in a place like Bali, like will Westerners especially, book this out like padel's booked out? I think so. I think it's just not there, right? Like if it's there, you're going to see a ton of crossover between padel and pickle in the future. I think even here in Jacksonville, I've got a buddy, Ryan Roach, who operates literally a one court facility called the Rowdy Pickle, but it's like the coolest place. It's got like murals on the wall. It's like, it's hip, it's young, it's trendy. Like they have like, MLP style leagues that get like packed and people are drinking and it's fun. He's created a really good culture in terms of having like young pickleball be fun here in Jacksonville. And he's going to open a bigger facility indoors that has, I think he's looking at like, I don't remember the amount of pickle courts, but he's thinking about adding two padel courts. And I think we're going to see a lot of facilities move that direction where you're going to have this hybrid of pickle and padel.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of our partners in Wichita, Tap and Paddles, they have 12 premium courts, indoor courts just open. And they're like, huh, how do we fill it more, right? Outside of just pickleball players. I said, hey, you have some land right here. Put in one padel court, right?
Yeah.
You'll get a different crowd in here. So
you'll get a different crowd and do it as a test run. See how busy it gets. And I think it'll get booked. Like people love playing padel. It's no different than pickle. Pickles, I think infrastructure-wise and cost-wise, you probably know. You've probably looked at it since you're actually building facilities. But I'm like the assumption that I have is that pickleball courts are much cheaper to build. Mm-hmm. Do you have actual numbers on that?
Not off the top of my head. I mean, it's just a little bit more expensive, you know, and a little bit more requires a little bit more space. But
not a crazy difference.
Correct. Yeah. And especially in Asia, right? It's gonna be a little bit cheaper. So
yeah, exactly. That's the beauty of building pickleball in Asia is that like we talked about the runway, like dollar goes a lot further there than it does here. And what you can build over there, I remember you telling me the prices of the place you're building in Bangkok, which is going to be a premium, like ultra great experience type place. And I think the cost of building that in a like you said, Bangkok's like a New York on steroids. You build that place in New York, I mean, we're talking probably 10x, like 5x, 10x, like an absurd like multiple.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was in a small town, population about 10,000 people in in Zambian, Vietnam. They built six courts, covered the works, right? $50,000. And I was like, wow.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Hey, have you heard of the new Play More app?
No, what is it?
Basically, the Play More app is like a stress-free scheduling app for pickleballers. So I don't know, we've struggled a lot in group text trying to organize play. You'll set it up and somebody will just like the text. And I'm like, does that actually mean you're coming or not?
Yeah, and it's like, you never know how many people you have, like what rating they are. It's kind of annoying.
It can kind of just be a nightmare to try to organize groups because group texts are just not fun. So basically, the Play More app lets you send out invitations. You get an RSVP list. If somebody doesn't show, there's a wait list that will actually like put somebody right into.
No way.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Dang, that's awesome. What's it called?
It's called the Play More app. So you should download it at the App Store, or you can go to getplaymore.com if you want to look at it online.
Are you planning on, I know we talked about like you're looking at maybe a spot in the, like a facility, like in one of the islands, like Koh Samui or Chiang Mai or something. Like, are you looking to build out kind of a brand of facilities in Thailand?
Yeah. You know what? Initially we wanted to do the pro tour, but then we kind of pivoted to facilities. Now we wanted to, first we wanted to do like a 24 court to host a big tournament. Now I think like, Thailand is not ready for that yet. Asia's not ready yet. We need to get more people playing. So pockets of 4 to 6 courts in different areas of the city and also in the islands, especially. We have a lot of tourists, heavy traffic out there in Koh Samui, Phuket. They are building Pattaya already. We want to get like, you know, I've talked to like one of my good buddies, Marcel Chan and Happy Hub, and we want to do stuff out there. You know,
love it.
Get the beach vibe, and you know you're on vacation, but you're still playing pickleball.
100%. What is it? Is it going to be under the Lunar brand, or are you going to do a different name for it?
A different name for it. Yeah, we have a whole.
You have the name.
We do. Our first one will be Papaya Pickleball Center, Papaya
love
Pickleball
it.
Club.
Love it.
Papaya is like the staple of Thailand, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, that's awesome. I love it. So Papaya Pickleball Club. When will the facility be ready in Bangkok?
Probably break ground pretty soon here in March. I would say March.
Okay.
Yeah.
March done?
Yep, March done. Yeah.
That's so fast.
I can't wait to
about to break ground and done in March. Love it.
This is Asia. We build things overnight.
Yeah.
So
yeah, no breaks, no holidays for you guys. You did mention it's in an old soccer pitch, so it's gonna be an indoor. So you're taking an old soccer pitch, indoor soccer pitch, and converting that to 6 courts, you said?
Yeah, so it's a covered soccer pitch. You know, the
so indoors are not just covered?
It's just covered.
Got it.
Yeah. The aircon is premium. I think we're going to test run this
one.
That's
a good point.
Yeah, we're going to do some different technology. Well, not different technology, but different coolant system to keep it look cool. Because Bangkok can get really, really hot real fast.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, keeping it covered, just being out of the sun, like it makes such a big difference no matter where you are. Like it's not AC, obviously, but just having it covered is huge.
Yeah. And, you know, Happy Hub in Vietnam has done that on their 9 courts at the granary. They have this really cool coolant system. It's not air con, but it's like 10 times cheaper. And they keep the place really, really cool. And that place is always booked.
Indoors or that's just covered as well?
Indoors. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are you guys planning on doing for the cupboard? Are you planning on like just like big fan? Because even with big fans, like, I don't know, people get like, yeah, we're cooling it off, but people get annoyed with like, oh, now it's windy. It's like, okay, but you're also cool. Pick your poison.
Yeah. So we have some specialists. Our architect is designing a coolant system. We do have like the big ass fan, right? That they use on the soccer pitch. We're not really going to use that, but we are, but not. But they're designing a cooling system, an airflow system that's going to help really, really cool the place down. So they're very,
very, cool.
Very excited and committed to it. So that's important to us, right? So
yeah, no, that's I'll be excited to come visit. Come
yeah,
out
absolutely.
There and,
yeah,
God, I love Thailand. It's gonna happen. Outside of Bangkok, so we. like we connected based on, well, one, Steve Kuhn connected us. And we chatted a little bit, and then you ran the tournament, the PWR tournament in Vietnam, which was, I'll just tell you and Andy did a phenomenal job. We had some challenges with weather, with a bunch of stuff, right? And you had a bunch of people to keep happy, from broadcast to organizers and a bunch of staff. So obviously you can't control the weather, but you guys communicated very well. You guys were on top of it. You guys were flexible, and you guys, I just can't say enough. You guys did a phenomenal job. So one, thanks for having me. And do you plan on hosting more events?
Well, you know, we were excited when we got the text that you were coming. So yeah. I appreciate you just committing to the people that you haven't met yet. And it is our first tournament. Andy Dang and his crew, the TTC group, DJoy, did a very great job of being host. And it was my first tournament as a tournament director and a consultant. You know, I've worked with I started working with Pickleball World Rankings this early this year, and they've given me the rights to host tournaments in Southeast Asia, right? And so our inaugural tournament in Vietnam, totally great success. And even with the weather, the TV crew, the host, we were very like 100% committed 24/7 to make sure that players, you know, were really treated properly, right? Because I've seen the whole tournament scene in the U.S. and everywhere else, and you know, I want to make sure that we address all the players concerned, make sure players are comfortable and we're you know, ready to compete, right? And so and I appreciate you guys really just trusting us. I know we were kind of we had a lot of commitments that we had to adhere to, and
sure,
with TV and everything. I really wanted to make sure we got our games done. It went well. We want to get better, right? We made sure that all the pain points that we saw during the tournament, that we address that for the future. And this is only the beginning, for not just for Vietnam, but all of Southeast Asia.
Yeah. And a great, great first event. And one thing I talked about with some other players, like some of our favorite events that we go to, whether it's States or somewhere else, is having housing or lodging that is walkable to the venue. And you guys had two beautiful towers right there, even some across the street. There are so many housing options that are really nice that were like, you know, especially with the rain and like the uncertainty of, you know, when we're going to play, like it was nice to be able to just hop up to the room and then kind of wait it out there, versus like just having to sit around the venue all day and like just, you know, twiddle our thumbs. So we love the fact that it was walkable. That was really, really, really nice. And it's pretty rare, honestly. Like, there's a handful of tournaments that I've played where you can walk to the venue from where you're staying. But typically it's like a drive, figure out parking. Parking's tight. You got to go take the shuttle. Like it's usually not that convenient. And when it sounds like a small thing, but being walkable to the venue is absolutely huge. And it makes such a big difference in terms of the player experience.
Yeah. I mean, and we have free water, free bananas, food.
Yeah.
I mean, within, you know, right on the
Electrolyte drinks, energy drinks. Yeah. You guys had everything.
Mm-hmm. Massage.
yeah. You had a physio there. It was a top notch experience. And even production wise, like having player intros, like such a small thing coming out on, not a small thing because you have like pyrotechnics going on, but the just having like, you know, announcing players' names and having them walk out and like making them feel like this is a real special event and this is a special match, and it builds it up. And, you know, it's better for the fans to be able to see like kind of intros like that. It's not necessarily an easy thing, but it's simple in terms of how to add to the production quality and broadcast of it.
No, I agree. Like, you know, you travel here over 5,000 miles and we want you to be loved as a player, right? Like we want you to remember this moment, that you're a special person, not just as a pro player, but any player that walks into our tournament. And so we really wanted you to feel like a VIP guest. So
yeah, that's exactly how it felt. And it was such a great experience. I just wish I had more time to explore Vietnam, but I guess like with you know, with you building more tournaments in Southeast Asia, and I'm looking to play more international events, you know, across the Indian leagues and tournaments there, Europe. Like, I'm just really committed to helping the sport grow internationally, mm-hmm. Which is why I love having guests like you on that are building it internationally. Because to a lot of people here in the States that follow, call it the PPA, the APP, MLP, the international seems a little bit of a black box of like an unknown of like what's going on. Like, mm-hmm. We know stuff's happening. We know it's going to be big. We know players are going to get good. But like, what's the current status of it? And I think having guys like you on really, really help show and shine a light on, you know, what's being built.
Yeah, absolutely. An honor. Like, we need people like you, Rob, Phuc Nguyen, and Marcel Chan that made their move there 6 months ago to Vietnam to really, you know, just grow pickleball. Not only have they grown pickleball, but pickleball has given back to them also in their career, right? Yeah, like Phuc Nguyen, and just look at Phuc and Marcel. They are thriving out there. And we hope more people like that talent, your level, your experience too, Rob, to come out here and help global pickleball really take off. And we appreciate that too from this side of the world. So,
no, absolutely. Very cool to see guys like that, like, you know, set up base over there and commit to the growth of it, because outside of the good that it does, right? The getting paddles in people's hands and making it a sport that people can, you know, find joy in and find health in and really, you know, find a little piece of, health and happiness, truly. Like there's so many stories of it's changing people's lives but at the end of the day, it's, you know, you're helping somebody get moving, mm-hmm. healthy, and they're finding joy in competing. And it's very social. There's lots of beautiful aspects of it, but like even outside the aspect of just like the growth of the sport in terms of that, it's just a replica of what's happening in the US, right? Like you had a bunch of people playing, COVID came, it blew up, and now the rest of the world is kind of lagging like 5 years behind. But the exact same thing that's happened in the US is going to happen internationally. It's just a matter of time. Like, there's no question to me.
Oh, even the drama.
Even the drama. It's already happening. Drama?
There's tour wars in India, tour wars in Vietnam now. Holy cow.
We have almost a dead replica of what happened in the States and India happening. It's happening in Asia. It's mm-hmm. It's like everybody's just vying for like to be the organization, mm-hmm. when and to own the whole pie, versus like go a lot further together, guys. Like you can team up, set differences aside, have a smaller piece of the pie, but go mm-hmm. a lot faster, go a lot bigger. Like there's a chance for, I would say, international organizations to team up and really create a better version of what is happening in the US with the UPA and APP. Like if they would just learn the lesson of what's happened over here and just use that information internationally, it would solve a lot of problems.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you.
Versus history repeating itself, you know?
Yeah. I think we have an opportunity still. But you know, I don't know what else to say. There's just so much going on.
It's egos, right? It's like the same thing that happened. It's just like, guys, set it aside.
Yeah.
I can understand like wanting different directions for the sport, like thinking like, oh, team's not good, you should go tournament, like that, like the thing that happened with like PPA MLP. Mm-hmm. But to just run like competing leagues and team events, it's like, okay, you guys understand like this product's great, but like. Yeah, I don't know. When you want the same product to win,
yeah,
just work together.
There's just not enough the skill level. There's not enough quality talent, right? There's quality people, but the talent level is not there to be.
Yeah, 100%. Not yet, right?
Like, not yet.
Like exclusivity at this point is. I mean, it's the reason I didn't go with PWR. It's the reason I went with Global, is because I don't want to be locked into really anything. And it's the same thing with why I went, you know, APP versus MLP PPA is I want the freedom to go international and play whatever I want and to help grow the sport and not be pigeonholed into this little box, even if I make, you know, slightly more money in that box. So, yeah, but I do think what's happening in India is great for the players. It's going to be changing some lives in terms of, you know, what kind of money is being offered in USD for the level of player that's going to be accepted into some of these leagues that are, I would say, you know, at the very, very low end of the pro spectrum that are going to be making, you know, thousands of dollars playing pickleball in this league where they've probably never made a dollar playing pickleball. So in terms of the players, I think it's going to be very attractive for new players to come in because they're going to be like, wow, that person's not very good. I can do that. And I think it will, like, the silver lining of it is it's going to attract a lot of new talent.
No, I totally agree. And, you know, the average wage over, I think in Asia, in Thailand specifically, is what, $6 a day, $7 a day, $10 a day, maybe?
Yeah.
And you're changing lives. And kudos to those tours, like, you know, PWR, Global Sports, and everyone else that's really investing in pickleball over here. I mean, you're changing lives. But, you know, we hope to make it more.
It's got to be sustainable, though.
Yeah, sustainable.
I mean, that's the big question is, like, will there be a return on all of this, you know? And that's been unproven in the U.S. Like, we're talking a different level of investment and salaries and stuff over there. But can it create a return? Mm-hmm. I mean, business at the end of the day, you have to be able to provide value, you know, in excess of what you're spending. So that's yet to be determined.
No, I agree. And there, that's why there's a need for people like you and myself to socially grow this sport, right? While everyone else is, we're focusing on competition. We need to get paddles in every elementary school, in everyone's 100%. Hands. So,
love it. Yeah, no, we're on the exact same page. I think there's nothing, and pickleball, this is, goes back to like conversations I've had with Steve Kuhn a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And he's very aligned with this too, right? Like he loves the growth. Like he thinks pickleball truly will change lives and he cares about the growth from like the 40 million by 2030 campaign, which, you know, I think we surpassed really well before 2030, which, you know, is a little mind blowing, but, you know, same thing. It's like when I would talk to him, he'd be like, pickleball can be the odd kid sport, right? Like when they're getting picked last in baseball and football and basketball, like this is more of a strategy thing. Mm-hmm. Sorry. This is more of like a strategy thing. And it's not just physical ability, right? Like you need some physical ability, but a lot of it is how can you outsmart your opponent, which is the beauty of it. And I'm a little bummed that paddles are going where they're going because you're losing a bit of that. But this can be like, call it a kid that gets bullied. Like this can be his thing where he's or she is like, this is their sport. They're better than the football player at the sport, which is powerful for a kid, right? Like you build confidence, you build a sense of worth, a sense of self. And there's not many sports where you can be the, you know, less athletic than somebody else, but be better than them. And it's really unique. And it's why I totally agree. Like the more paddles we can get in kids' hands, the better.
Yeah, I totally agree. And yeah, it's just all around, you know, boost the, you know, the human morale. Right. So love it.
Totally. And so just back to your story a little bit, what were you doing before pre-pickleball, pre-pandemic in terms of career life? And what allowed you to make that switch into pickleball? And this is a question for maybe somebody that's listening that's like, man, I love pickleball. I'm very aligned with what these guys are talking about in terms of helping it grow. I'm stuck in this job that I hate or this whatever, and I'd love to do something in pickleball more full time. Like, what were you doing prior that allowed you to make that leap into pickleball more full time?
So what am I still doing too? Like, I'm 20 years in the pharmacy field. On the business side of pharmacy. So I'm out in San Diego, headquartered out there. I work for a private PBM, I still do. So I'm
cool.
I'm gonna say,
you're comboing it up. I love it.
Goodness. Yeah. And, you know, no other job has, you know, no other sport, I think, would give me the feel, the passion to want to do two jobs, right? I'm crazy working three, you know, around the clock, basically sleeping 3-4 hours a day. And, but, you know, I feel more energized now than when I was in my 20s. I'm 45 years old, still grinding. And so I'm still in the corporate field. You know, when I'm in Asia, I work overnight. So I think like,
and then during the day you work on pickleball.
Pickleball. I think pickleball 24/7 now.
Yeah. Love it.
Yeah. So that's what I do. And, you know, I dabble in real estate, dabble in restaurants. But pickleball has opened so much opportunities. Like, I've never met so a variety of people. Like, you know, I'm good friends with the vice president of the Memphis Grizzlies now. So because of pickleball, right?
Rich so random.
Shout out, right? And he loves pickleball. Avid Love pickleball, it. Basketball player, an executive for NBA. And now he's like addicted to pickleball. So
that is the wild part about pickleball is like it's truly like a bridge to meeting some really influential, you know, well-known people. Because it's very relatable. It's like, and they all think they're like so much better than they are. Right. It's like, because to get to the level they've gotten, whether it's in business or whatever, it's like, you've got to be very competitive and driven. And then you get into pickleball and playing a sport where like, it's relatively easy to start. And you could think like, oh, I'm beating my buddies, but that doesn't mean you're good. But they all think it means they're good.
Oh, goodness. Yep. I know the feeling. Yeah. So many opportunities. I mean, pickleball has created so many opportunities for me, lifelong friendships too. And one of my partners I've met last year in Thailand, right, that I've never met before. Now he's one of my closest friends, investor in my business so, because of pickleball.
Love it.
Right.
That's it, man.
It's crazy.
Yeah. It's the people you can meet, you would never imagine 3 years ago, probably, that you'd be opening a pickleball facility in Bangkok and, you know, owning a paddle company and being this like heavily entrenched in pickleball while you're still working your pharmaceutical job.
Yeah, exactly. I was in Hainan Island, met the owner of Mission Hills Golf, right, who hosts all these celebrity golf tournaments with Kobe Bryant and LeBron James and everything else. Like, who am I sitting in the same room as these guys? So
it opens doors.
Mm-hmm.
So for anybody listening that is working a full-time job, just stop being lazy. Be like Matt and just, you know, work five jobs.
Five jobs.
And don't sleep. Yeah.
Yeah, find your passion. It really is. Yeah. You know, and if you're passionate about pickleball, if you really have the mentality to just, you know, grind, not just grind, but, you know.
Add value, right? It's like, I think that what I've taken from like your start in pickleball is, like you said, with the paddles, it's been less about like how to make money. You don't even have a website. It's been more about like, how can I help grow the sport and help players and help you focused on creating value, which, you know, the passion will take it from there. Like if you focused on like, oh my God, there's so many paddle companies, I can make money selling paddles. And that's the focus of like how to make money fast. You're going to burn out, right? Like, cause there's no underlying like passion or drive or like trying to make a difference there. So I just love your story in terms of focusing on like creating value versus how to make a quick buck.
And you know, I mean, to me, like, be a good person at the end of the day. You know, I think the world, God will take care of you in the long run, right? There's going to be some challenges, obstacles, but you know, just having a faith that, you know, you invest in people and then someone else will take care of you, even if it's not right in front of you, right? So
sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, really enjoyed learning more about your story and what you're building in Asia and Thailand. And just thanks for taking the time and chatting.
Yeah, appreciate you. Can't wait to host you in Thailand and whoever else wants to come out and see this part of the world. And, you know, I'd love to just show you a different culture. So, and appreciate everything you've done for pickleball. You've been an original trailblazer, and I've always wanted to meet you and hear your stories. And man, I saw the legend in person. He's a great, great player. So,
oh, thank you. That means a lot. Like like you said, I found passion in pickleball, and it's I love having conversations like this. I love spreading the word of pickleball and getting paddles in people's hands and helping grow the sport. And Love that you're doing it internationally, because to me, that's the biggest need right now is growing it internationally. So big props, and can't wait to get out to Bangkok to spend some time and play on your courts.
Yeah, awesome. Shout out to my son, Malachi Judy, for just, you know, believing me, pushing me. No other people has done so much for me, like just trusting me. Dad's gone like 75% of the year, and so you know I hopefully this will be a legacy for him to not only play pickleball but just to do good in life, right?
Love it. That's so cool. Shout out to Malachi. All right. Thanks so much, Matt. I appreciate you, man.
Bye,
and
brother.
Look forward to seeing you in Bangkok soon.
Okay. Thank you so much.